On this episode of Sales Burrito, we're going to talk to you about not only sales engineers that are in your regions, but how to deal with other sales engineers that are in other parts of the world. You may think that the message that you try to convey to a sales engineer is well understood, but whether it's cultural differences or territory differences, they can be a challenge. So we have a special guest today that has cracked the code on how to efficiently, eloquently be able to convey a message to meet the objectives of any sales engineer around the world. Welcome to Sales Burrito.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's time! Welcome to Sales Burrito! Your podcast for today's sales engineers working in technology sales, created by SEs for SEs, with your hosts Enrique Barreto and Dave Siles.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Sales Burrito. Dave Siles with Enrique Barreto, and hey buddy, we have a special guest today.
We do. Let's let this special guest introduce himself, since I know that he's been doing this for a long time. I know that he has cracked the code on how to train and enable sales engineers across the globe. And, you know, sometimes we often think that, sometimes we think that, hey, whatever we learn in one place is what it gets replicated across the globe. But that is not the case. So for our audience, tell us a little bit about yourself, my friend.
Hey guys, thanks for having me. Great to be here. And I just love that funky intro. And did you come up with that yourself?
I did.
Wow.
I may do an NFT of that, Dave. I may just do the whole copyright thing. You never know. But yeah. I did.
It's working. It's weight in gold. Good stuff.
Thank you.
So guys, my name is Linus Svensson. Pre-sales engineer since 20 plus years, based out of Stockholm, Sweden, in northern part of Europe. I used to work with Dave Siles back 10, 12 years back. And I just love what I do and happy to be on the show and share some thoughts with you guys.
No, thank you for being with us. Let's kick it off from the start, right? I mean, obviously, you know that this podcast is created by SEs for SEs. It's, you know, the whole concept of the Sales Burrito and how do you have all these ingredients within the burrito to ensure that everything matches and everything tastes great and the final product is a great sales engineer. What are some of the techniques or the strategies that you've seen being in Sweden or being in EMEA, as you know, perhaps other business leaders and whatnot tell you, hey, we gotta execute on X, Y, or C. Mm-hmm. How do you do it? Walk us through how do you do it to make sure that the teams understand maybe a message that comes from a different perspective so that they understand it?
It's a great question. And you know, I think it's a balance really, because there's definitely a big part of what pre-sales do is the same across the globe. Might take different forms, different ways of expressing it, but at the end of the day, we're technologists who want to talk to customers about, you know, how they can make their life easier and the solutions better. But then it's probably like the top of the iceberg. The thing that you see is the things that sets different cultures apart. And this is where you have to be a little bit attuned as a leader and tune your message. And we were joking a little bit before we started the podcast about, you know, awesome doesn't really translate too well in European languages. You know, it's a great expression, you know where it's coming from. But, you know, if you bring that to a customer talking about your product that's awesome, yeah, it's going to be a rough ride.
Well, I'm very sympathetic, or sympathetic is not the wrong word. I'm empathetic about it, right? Because as I manage teams across the globe, specifically in Latin America, right? There's countries in Latin America that you cannot say hard drive, or you cannot say USB stick, or you have to say it in their dialect, right? So I had to learn how to speak technical Spanish so I could go to Colombia and be able to reference disco duro to hard drive. And the thing about it is that if you say the English word, but you're talking Spanish, depending on the country, they just don't like it. They see it as a, I don't know. Like, I mean, I'm terrible at Spanish, and that's my native language. So, I mean, they want to correct, right? So to me, it was important that I needed to learn the culture, right? The culture to me is super important to learn. So sounds like the same is for you.
Yeah, sure. And you know, it's easy to make fun of. I'm had European roles for quite some time, and, you know, for I think it's 18 out of the 21 years I've been managing teams, it's been, you know, more than one nationality. And, you know, even countries really close together, they can be very different in the way they want to approach a sales opportunity.
Mm-hmm. Ain't that the truth?
Example. Yeah. So, guys, you know, I know you guys have Mexico and Canadians bordering you guys, and it's probably not, you know, it's not even on the same continent.
That's definitely a valid topic. I mean, I remember globally managing a team before you joined me, and then taking over running that team kind of in Europe. But, you know, trying to hire somebody from Germany to cover the UK or something like that, just not going to work, right? The dynamics just don't play there. So, yeah, it's definitely, you have to understand, you know, all the cultural impacts and the differences. And we have some of that in the States, but nowhere near what you'd have in Europe from that perspective. I love that, you know, you're bringing that up, because it's something that people don't think about, right? And it's like, you know, I think smaller geography, you think just, you know, they're border countries, why can't we just have somebody jump across the border? It just doesn't work that way over there.
There's some great examples, and you know, I still remember first time I went to Madrid to have a session with a couple of customers, and it was like a small seminar, so about 10-15 people invited. And I show up 9:30 sharp, good to go. You know, two guys there. That's it. And, you know, 10 o'clock, yeah, it's like, yeah, 7-8 guys. And 45 minutes into my presentation, these guys, you know, and they walk into the room, not only like sneaking in, hiding in the back and sitting down. No, they say hello to everybody. It's like, hey, man, how's it going? So it's like, and as a Swede, we, you know, you're very punctual. You show up on time with the right stuff in the right state of mind and everything. It was just, you know, and I looked at my guys and it's like, well, what's going on? Are they, you know, not interested? No, it's fine. You know, take your time, say hello to them. You know, they just want to grab some food and sit down, grab a coffee. And at the end of the day, it was a great session, but it, you know, ran over by like 2 hours. And the schedule for my rest of my day was not what I thought it would be, but it was like on-site learning. Really interesting experience.
What's interesting is, it, you know, that also happens in the United States, right? You know, I'm located in the southeast of the United States, you know, in Tampa, Florida. The selling motion of an SE in the southeast is completely different from the selling motion of an SE that is located in New York City. You know, New York City is all about, what do you want? Get out. Quick, to the point. The Southeast is about, hey, let's talk about my dog, all the trailers that I have. We went skiing. You talk for 20 minutes on the human side, and then 5 minutes or so. So that's the process, right? And as I was supporting, you know, different parts of the United States, I had to learn my persona hat, to change my hat and say, okay, I am in New York. I have to be direct. I am in Atlanta, I have to be more friendly, you know? And of course, when I can't even imagine going to Sweden. I mean, what is the Sweden way? What is the way of,
we Swedes are
going through that.
Yeah, we have a couple of reputation going on for us. And one of them, we're excellent engineers. You know, we know how to build stuff. That's how we built, you know, the economy of Sweden, basically. We're engineers, we build stuff. Not necessarily the best guys to sell, but we know how to put stuff together. And also we're very keen on consensus. You know, we're not very much, you know, standing out in the crowd and having an opposite direction. You know, that's not really a typical Swedish trait. And what you find is that the Swedish guys that go to the States and work there, they're probably the guys who are not comfortable with the Swedish consensus mentality. They want to go to the valley, they want to make a name for themselves, they want to, you know, break every rule and do something crazy. Whereas Swedes are very, very keen on checking in on other people, see, you know, how do you feel about this? Is it okay? Can we do it? And it's really unnerving. I've been working in international sales for 20 years, and I'm coming back to Sweden, and I'm trying to close the deal. And I ask the customer, how do you think it's going? And they say, yeah, well, you know, it's good. Yeah, okay, what does it mean? Is it, you know, well, we have to check with a few guys and, you know, get back to you. And it's basically just this, you know.
Posturing. It's the posturing of things.
Exactly.
But, you know, I'm way too old now in my career, right? I think now in the past, as I'm introducing an account as a VP or whatever it is, to your point, I ask the same question, but I'm very direct. Like I basically tell my prospect, the reason I'm here is to make sure that whatever we design for you works for your environment. And my hope and my aspiration is that we can create a partnership so I can sell you my product. And I literally say, sell you my product. Because what I found is that once I tell them, hey, I want to make you a customer, I think a lot of the posturing that you're talking about kind of goes away. Like maybe people will tell you straight up, it's like, I don't like this about your product. Well, and it's my job then to know what is it that you don't like, and can I fix it? Or do I have a stopgap for it? Or maybe I don't have anything. But I think the sooner I lower my defenses and tell people I'm here to sell you my product, even though I have this VP title and whatnot, I think it helps me, or at least helps someone. No, so far it hasn't failed me. Knock on wood.
No, I think you're onto something. But it's also, for me, it's really about what kind of situation you're in. I mean, now do you have a point product that fixes one thing and one thing only, and you do that super well? Then that's fine, because you just want to get to, do you need my thing? Yes or no. And as soon as you get to that point, then, you know, either you can have a good conversation or you can move on to the next prospect. Mm-hmm. But the challenge is, if you have a very broad portfolio, you can fix a lot of things. I mean, it's more of a, okay, I understand you have different situations, different issues. Which one is more important than the other? Is it, you know, if I talk to the C-suite, do they agree with you and this is the most important one? So I think it's really about the nature of the company you work for as well. So the more narrow your solution is, the quicker you want to get to, is this a good fit, yes or no?
Yeah, absolutely. And, I mean, engineering cycles are the same. No matter what, you're going to win $100 or $100,000. Sure. You're going to spend that time. So fail fast, right?
Yep.
Obviously, one of the things that's happened this year with, you know, with COVID and the impact, Linus, is that, you know, we've all shut down travel. I'm sure you shut down travel as well. You know, but you still have to hire and recruit a world-class team. Can you walk us through kind of how you still taking on that challenge and managing and adapting and hiring people when you necessarily can't, you know, get the human touch in front of that part of the equation? Because it's something that comes up in our conversations with a lot of times with our audience on this podcast is, you know, how do I still recruit the rock stars and find the diamonds in the rough when, you know, we're all competing for this talent now virtually?
Yeah, it's a great question. And you know, maintaining a relationship over distance, virtually, phone, whatever, it's okay. You can do it. If you know somebody, you can pick up the phone, you can keep that relationship going. But it's really, really hard to build a relationship entirely new from scratch, like a hiring process through virtual. So the way I dealing with that is again, I'm referring to, you know, the company I'm currently in. It's a big one. So we have a lot of raw talent in the company. We hire a lot of inside sales, you know, junior technical guys. So the first thing I do, I just walk the halls, sort of virtually, and I check with people, you know, this kid, that kid, is he, you know, a prospect? And that's kind of the cheat trick, because everybody
works for it. It's valid, right? I mean, an internal promotion is always cheaper than an external hire, right? Mm-hmm. Any day of the week. Mm-hmm.
You know what you're getting. But the second one is network. You need to have a network. I mean, there's no way around it. I mean, you need to have your little black book with numbers to call. And sometimes it works out, and you know, the market is changing, and you know, we're not getting any younger, so there's new role talent on the market that you know, might have an eye on. But at least you have some place to start digging. And usually what I find is those two pools of resources, you know, internal, looking at the internal talent, and then checking my network. And I'll be very direct. I mean, it's like, this is what I'm looking for, and I have some great guys, but no, sorry, you're the senior, you will be bored in 6 months. I'd love to have you on my team, but I, you know, out of respect of your, you know, seniority, I if I offered you this job, you'd come back after 6 months and look at me and go, what? Why did you, you know?
Yeah, that's great insights. I mean, you know, we do the same thing here. I mean, we keep a pipeline of candidates just continuously because there's, A, we're growing so fast that we have to. But B, it's, you know, talent's not always looking, right? You know, the good talent's never looking. You know, they're already committed to somebody. So, you know, you have to go fishing. And so I agree, you know, networking is great. You know, and the fact that you have a large company where you can promote within, I think is phenomenal. And it's something we always did back at our previous company together. We always looked at the internal talent, the inside sales engineers, and said, you know, who's ready to go to the field? And, you know, gave them the chance to kind of go out and strike out on their own. I know Enrique is doing the same thing right now. I mean, you know, I think anybody who can build a farm team internally and then turn those inside, you know, SEs once they're mature out to the field is, you know, it's great. It's great for their career. It's great for the company. It shows that you invest in your people too.
Hey, Linus, let me ask you this question because I think is important and I need to understand it better myself because, you know, you've been working in your market and your territory for a longer than me. Let's put it that way. So I have a lot of high respect for sales engineers in EMEA, Asia Pacific, and Latin America. Not that I don't have, you know, respect for great sales engineers in the United States where I'm from, but there is a difference. One of the things that I've seen in all these different, you know, continents per se or different countries is that I tend to see that sales engineers are very super, super technical. Like they know the bells and whistles of everything that is going on within a product that they're selling. Now, I see that as a blessing and as a curse. And I would like to hear from a curse perspective, what I see wrong often is that because they're very technical in their product, it's very easy to say, well, our product doesn't do this and we need to get product Y. Or product Y is going to beat us because they do this, and we don't do that. And we try to, you know, it becomes a stagnation. It becomes this challenge of, hey, I can't close because they can do it better than I can. But I almost feel that sometimes sales engineers cannot think outside of the box. What are some of the strategies that you have used to help with that friction point to help those sales engineers continue to move forward?
I think I can't tell you how much I like that question. It's a great question because I like every fiber in my body, I say, yep, been there, done that. You know, particularly the, you know, we hire engineers, you know, majority of these guys have very logical thinking. Mm-hmm. Does the product go A? No, it does not. Okay, I can't sell.
Exactly. You know, that's the problem with that is that on us, if you have an A and SE relationship and the SE is saying, we don't do it, it's very binary, right. Very zeros and ones, right? And then
No, but that's what I see as the starting point of any good technical person, right? So that's what you take, you recruit an engineer because they're great technical guys, they have some business acumen, you can turn them into sales engineers. And that's where the transformation happens, right? You take them from this position of, we can't do A, therefore we can't sell. And you say, all right, but, you know, is A that necessary? Is this everything that's going to happen with the customers? Is what about B and C and D? And what about, you know, all the other good stuff we have in the portfolio, whatever? You work around it, you have the flanking strategy. You guys know this, of course, but, you know, if you can't do a frontal, then you do flanking, you retreat and you feint and you know, change the game. And so there's all sorts of things that we can, tricks and tips that we can teach these guys if they're willing to listen. But to be honest, I have guys on my team, they've been pre-sales for 25 plus years. And I still get, oh, we released this product and, you know, we're missing these two features and therefore I can't sell. It's like, really? You're back to like entry level sales engineering. And don't get me wrong, I appreciate it. I mean, I get it. You really like these features because your main customer is asking for them. But come on, you're better than this. This is what your 25 years of experience taught you.
Is the leg broken? Do we sell a cast? Yes. Yeah. And they have a hangnail. Yeah.
But it's so true because if you don't have a strong leader that is able to help those sales engineers on not thinking binary zeros and one and just thinking the art of possible, you know, what if you sell them this first? That's a land and expand strategy. Or what if you, you know, focus on the things that matter? If that's 10% of their environment that you can't meet with your product, so be it. Use it with, do it with the old product, right? You know, come up with a stopgap solution. So it's great. It's great insight that you're giving us on this one, because it's something that I've seen.
And again, I mean, I think, you know, it's so different depending on what kind of company you work for. And I keep coming back to the fact that some companies need to get that product in, because that's what that, you know, your SKU list is like three items. That's it. Mm-hmm. If you have a bigger list, it still feels something else. Okay, change the conversation. You move sideways. You try something else. And eventually they see the light. They come back to you and realize that you know, feature A wasn't that, you know, it's not the end of the world. You can work around it because these are great guys to work with. There's so many other problems. So, you know, but to this day, honest to God, it's every product release. The first thing I get in my email from my guys is like, yeah, we're missing this, we're missing that. How can we sell this?
or even on an RFP, right? Like if an RFP lands on your lap, because the RFPs can be so ambiguous or so direct sometimes, when you read it, you're like, doesn't work. We don't fit on this, right? And then the amount of times that I've trained sales engineers on reading between the lines on an RFP is, to me, is mind-boggling.
Yeah, and I think the trick to answering an RFP is yes and.
That's right.
Can you feature A? Yes.
For the right amount of money, we can do anything product market fit wise.
Exactly. That's exactly right.
Jokes aside, I mean, it's really about, I mean, some things you mean, if you're not a good fit, you should fight another battle. But
absolutely.
In many cases, you need to have a second look at it and just make sure that you don't, you know, there's no other chance of comeback. And that's what I tell my guys as well.
Yeah. So one thing we love to do when we have special guests on Linus is, you know, let you give you a crystal ball view of the world, right? So play it out. Where do you think the sales engineer career is going, right? We've seen a lot of change in the industry over the last couple of years. Obviously this past year, you know, if you play it out 5 years, you know, what's the role of a sales engineer going to become? And, you know, does it stay the same? Does it change? What are our audience that's listening to this, especially the ones just getting into the career, what do they need to do to kind of be, you know, operational ready for the, you know, the job ahead?
Another great question. And I think really it's kind of two paths you're going down. So either you're really, really good at a specific area, become more of a specialist. And just not, you know, people, you know, I had guys on my team, they're super comfortable being specialists. They want to be the guy who know exactly everything about a certain product or feature or vertical or whatever it is. And you know, some people just thrive on that. That, you know, they go down the well and they don't want to come up. To shut down the hole and go get them. And it's fine because we need these guys. These are great guys to work with. They you know, put them in front of the customer, give them the right surroundings, and they're gonna kill it. But I think, you know, the majority of the pre-sales is gonna be the generalist, the guys who understand the landscape, the architects, the you know, little, I wouldn't call it business people, but they do understand the business implication of IT, you know, IT stuff that we sell. And these guys, for me, is probably the ones that are going to be sort of more visible in organizations. So these key individuals, I mean, if you have a good guy who can architect a solution for a customer, you know, pulling on different partnerships, you know, getting it all to fit, making sure there's some financial goals at the back end of it, these guys are the gold nuggets. These are the guys who are going to be paid the top dollars. And these guys are the ones that we really, as a company, need to culture and also maintain.
Yeah, it's a great nugget to pull on, for sure. Yeah, everybody focuses on the technical skills so much, but, you know, it's only 10% of it, really, at the end of the day, for a sales engineer, right? You have to be able to round it out and be able to talk to the business, have a great communication skills. And, you know, if you can understand the transaction or commercial terms of it as well, just as much as the account executive, you know, you're worth your weight in gold. So it's a great, great nugget of information to share there. And I fully agree with you. I think, obviously I work in a specialist organization, so the specialist side of it's kind of near and dear to my heart, but at the same time, you know, a generalist can pick up anything, right? And that's the one thing about our industry. I mean, obviously, you know, at some point we're going to stop talking about data centers. Everything will be, you know, in the cloud or at the edge. And people will be like, you know, I don't remember pulling up a floor and, you know, it'll be like, you know, the kids today don't know what a rotary dial phone is, but, you know, it's the same thing. It's like, you know, so you know, the industry's changing and changing fast. So it's like, how do you keep your skills fresh? How do you keep up on top of it? So, you know, I've always said
the same thing. I mean, I think it's a good point there, Dave. Sorry for interrupting.
No, go ahead.
You know, talking about the cloud and the edge. I mean, what is the edge? I mean, there's you know, 100 different definitions, and it's like the far edge, the you know, the mist. And
yeah.
What I found some customers is actually taking like, yeah, we have a cloud first strategy. So all our workloads go into the cloud. Okay, that's interesting. What do you do with data and what about data gravity and you know, latency and usual stuff? Oh yeah, we're keeping some edge nodes. Okay, what's the edge nodes? And my goodness, it looks very much like a data center. No, it's an edge node.
No, it's not. No.
It's a cloud first strategy, but we have keeps on the edge nodes and I mean, that's what I hear from more than one customer.
Sure. And obviously for where you work today, that makes perfect sense. I mean, you know, I mean, I'm truly running into customers where data is living at the edge and dying at the edge. It never makes it back off the edge, right? They're OODA looping it at the edge and saying, you know, we went through this terabyte of data that we generated in the last 5 minutes. We kept the 5 megs that was worth something and then threw the rest of it away, right? So that's the kind of edge that, you know, I'm kind of alluding to there. But it's like, you still have to figure out how do you do compliance on that? How do you protect that? You know, I mean, you know, it's like if you look at a Tesla, Tesla's driving down the road, you know, generates 20 terabytes a day. It doesn't send 20 terabytes back to the cloud, right? It did that at the edge and then threw the rest of that data away, kept the meaningful stuff. So, yeah, just that kind of stuff. It's like, okay, how do you become an engineer and deal with that kind of architecture where you know it's there, but you never see it, right? So it's a little bit of an interesting dynamic. And, you know, obviously topic has been up on other episodes we've had, you know, artificial intelligence, machine learning, kind of, you know, how do you get into that from the sales engineering side of it when you didn't go to programming school? We're not a CS student. And, you know, you kind of see the wave coming there. And, you know, my colleague here, Enrique, he's been data sciencing himself up, you know, and I think it's, you know, just kind of the new wave.
Oh yeah. I mean, just this morning I installed Docker. I downloaded images. I am, you know, doing API calls all in my desktop. You know, that way I can be an example to other sales engineers that the old boss can get it done faster than others.
That's right.
So, those in the audience that are aspiring to be like me, you have to be technical. You have to be able to challenge yourself when you're doing something new and say that you can do it. And you know, your actions speak louder than words. Always.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
it's been an absolute pleasure having you on the podcast. We obviously greatly appreciate you coming on. We love the viewpoint. You know, I think it's something that we're going to have to focus on more. Our audience is global for sure. And I think, you know, obviously when we drop this episode here in the week, we'll probably drag a bigger spike out of Europe with just, I think, your presence on it. Because obviously, you know, you've got a network of people follow you. So. Yeah, we greatly appreciate instead our warmest thanks for coming on the show today.
It's been a pleasure. Thanks, guys.
So from Rican and I, we obviously want to give everybody a heads up that the next episode will be dropping on Wednesday. We always post these on all the major podcast platforms and at salesburrito.com. Additionally, we've got a new show that's out. And so if you haven't caught it yet, Tech and Tacos is dropping on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. It's a little bit different format than Sales Burrito. Tech and Tacos is a live, interactive, 1 hour, what's happening in the news in the technology industry, across crypto, gaming, the internet, startups, startup failures, everything in between. So tune in and join us there. You can always find those details at salesburrito.com as well. And until the next time, you know, follow us on social media and we're out. So keep the chips and salsa going and the knowledge flowing. Have a great day, everyone.
We hope you enjoy the Sales Burrito Show. To subscribe to catch future episodes wherever you catch your favorite podcast. Follow us on Twitter, LinkedIn, and Facebook at Sales Burrito. Until next time, keep the chips and salsa going and the knowledge flowing.